We have our employees of reason. We've brought some employees from our engineering department, from our line department, from our member services, from our meter department, and our interim office manager, in case there's any questions that you may have other than the presentation. The presentation is going to be on some proposed rates that we're going to be filed with Public Regulation Commission on February the 3rd. What we're doing is we're going community to community and explaining why we're doing and what we're doing and how we've fared in the past. We've had some changes here 4.5 months ago, turnover and management. At that time, we started a cost of service study, and it was discovered that our margins were low. The money that we make to be able to pay our loan to RUS. That they were in default in 2009. We were okay in 2008, but we were headed in a direction to be in default in 2010. What does that mean? That means that REA or the Rural Utility Services could come in and take over the COLA and implement any rates that they feel necessary to be able to have the consumers make sure the co-op can make its mortgage payments. What we've done in the last 4 months, we've been very aggressive in trying to cut expenses. As you know, the membership voted to reduce the amount of board members from 11 to 5, set a cap on board spending for the board members of $10,000 per year and the board president $15,000 a year. This, in essence, not immediately, but as the redistricting goes and drops the board members to 5 board members, will essentially save about $350,000 less. Okay, that's a big step in going towards saving expenditures. We also looked at the amount of money that we have financed with RUS. Any amount that was financed over 5% was eligible to refinance at a lower percentage. And we were able to refinance to CFC at 4.65%, $8 million with a savings of $1 million over the life of the loan. So we're making progress there. We had a lot of delinquents accounts. We almost had $500,000 in delinquents. That means people weren't paying their bills. We got aggressive with that. Here in the last 4 months, the office personnel has really been aggressive and understanding and making arrangements. They're just not going out there and yanking meters unless they absolutely have to. Have collected about $200,000 in the last 4.5 months. I mean, they've done a really good job. We also have a tower on the Socorro Peak that we have leased from the state of New Mexico. I've been able to secure an agreement with a sublessee to just occupy space on the tower that'll get us about $15,000 over a 5-year period, probably about $18,000. We've also cut back on maintenance. I hate the word cut back on maintenance because PNM had a concept about 15 years ago. They wanted to make dividends for their shareholders. And the way they did it, they said, okay, we'll just stop maintaining lines and we'll just fix them as they fall down. Well, they got themselves in a lot of trouble because they ended up having a lot of angry customers, a lot of lines falling down, a lot of outage time, and a lot of overtime. So that concept or theory didn't work. It ended up biting them in the butt in the long run. We've also looked at other type of spending. We're building a new substation here in Kamado, and I'll touch base on that very quickly. It's a very unique substation. There's only a handful in the United States. Normally a substation will run around $1.2 million. By going with this innovative design using alloy metals for the grounding grid, we've been able to cut the cost down to about $600,000 for the substation itself. So, I mean, we're working where we can. We're looking. As the school superintendent in Socorro said, you need to turn over every stone and find a way to save money for the co-op before you can convince us that we need to move forward with the rate increase. And, you know, as we explain it, we're going to the different communities. We've had good attendance. We've had some attendance. You know, our time frame to get these meetings out is short. We advertised best we could. We normally don't have good attendance in District 5 or whatever meeting we have. But I don't know why. But anyway.
Excuse me. Only at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when most of us are working might be part of the reason.
Yes, ma'am. And we will schedule another one if we have to. If you guys feel the need for us to schedule another one, we will. Got off track there just a little bit.
Sorry.
And we do have at the end of an agenda time for questions and answers. That way we can get through the presentation, finish. You guys can do your questions, and we'll give answers or comments.
Okay.
So anyway, we've gone to the different communities. We've been fairly receptive so far with the businesses and with District 1, District 3 Magdalena. We didn't have very good attendance, and again, that was 9 in the morning. I agree with you. We will probably reschedule for 5 o'clock in the afternoon or 5:30. But anyway, we'll move forward with that. We're not to the point to where we file the rates yet. But these are informational meetings. They're published in the back of the enchantment. Anybody could feel free to call into the office and get a personal explanation. So the avenue is there to be able to call in. I've brought some employees, like, so I'll go ahead and let them introduce themselves and what they do, in case you have any questions about other things.
Good afternoon. My name is Marilyn Madrid. I'm in the Member Service Department. I'm happy to help you anytime you'd like to call me. I've been with the co-op 15 years, and I'll work hard at trying to answer your questions or find an answer to your questions.
My name is Aileen Latassa, and I am the Interim Office Manager. I've worked for the co-op 13 years, and just like Marilyn, I'm there to help you if you have any questions. Regarding your meter readings, anything, just give me a call. If I can't answer the question, I'll certainly find somebody that can. So please give us a call if you have any questions.
Roberta Bacco, Member Services. I've been with co-op almost 10 years now.
Andrew Romero, I've been with co-op 27 years in the meter department and also Member Services.
Randy Pacheco. In the club, almost 12 years, Member Service and Leader Department.
Ricky Williams, based here in Camaro, been here 17 years.
Kenny Jones, been here a while.
Yes, sir.
It says it all.
Yes, sir. And I'll make this comment. Our co-op covers an area of about 11,500 square miles. Of our 44 tri-state co-ops, we're the second largest co-op in area. We've got 37 employees, probably 12 linemen, that keep the lights on 24/7, 365 days a year, in inclement weather. It'd be nice if we had an outage during the day, and we do sometimes with birds and stuff. But I rank these employees, not only the outside crew, but the inside crew when we do have outages. We've got crews out of Beaverhead or Negrito or up at Fence Lake or Red Lake. They stay on the radio and make sure that they're safe and that they get all the information they need. I say we're one of the best co-ops in the 44, if not the Southwest. So I do give credit to them. They're the core of the co-op. I'm going to go ahead and introduce Kat Cobb. She's a rate analyst that's worked with the co-op for several years. She works with co-ops in 5 states. She's got probably the most experience in this type. She's got the most experience in this type of rate studies of anybody that I know. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to her. And I might interject once in a while if I feel that I need to add something.
Good afternoon. My name is Kat Cobb. I'm from FGS Engineering in Albuquerque. Can everyone hear me? Okay. I was hired by the cooperative. Well, I've been in the business since 1973, and I've been working with cooperatives. I've worked with this cooperative since the 70s. I was hired by the cooperative to do a cost of service study and to redesign the rates to go along with that cost of service study. What we do first is we take a 12-month snapshot of everybody's bill in the cooperative, all of the expenses. We do annualizations to those expenses for known and measurable changes. For instance, we put in the plant for the new Clamato substation, transmission lines, double circuit, interchange, and we put that plant into service and depreciated it and calculated the interest of long-term debt on that to reset the rates. Now, the rates that you're paying right now, particularly for residential, are $9 a month and 9.25 cents. But on top of that 9.25 cents, you also pay about 2.8 cents in pass-through adjustments. That would be your fuel adjustment for cost of purchase power and debt cost adjustment, which is the increased cost for interest on long-term debt for money that the cooperative borrows to build new plant. And so essentially what you're paying is 12.04 cents on the residential side during this test year, plus the $9. And what we found when we did the cost of service study, and as you know, last year in 2009, well, year before last, in 2009, the cooperative did not make their financial ratios that are required by the federal government to show that the cooperative has enough margins to be able to repay their debt. Now, they set these ratios at a 1.1 for an operating margin, which is the operating margin is revenues less expenses. And then there's something that we call modified margins, which includes non-operating margin interest. Then we have total margins, which includes an allocation from Tri-State, the power supplier, for patronage capital, because the power supplier is also a cooperative, owned by the 44 cooperatives that are members of it. So it is a non-cash allocation, just like you get an assignment every year, but you may not get the money for 15, 20 years down the line. So that money is not a cash item that they get. So we essentially look at the operating margin of the cooperative to make sure that they have enough money to be able to, first off, repay their debt, and second, also, they have to finance all of the general plant of the cooperative, which would include anything that has to do with computers, that has to do with office furniture, that has to do with bucket trucks, or any type of those facilities that the federal government does not fund. So they have to have that money available. They also have to have enough money in which to do the projects prior to being reimbursed by the federal government through a loan. So they do a projection for a construction work plan 4 years into the future. They also project how many consumers they think are going to connect to the system within the next 4 years. And then they project how much they think they're going to need to borrow from the federal government. Now, we did have some questions about why they borrow. As you know, the cost of the Clamato sub, or you may not know, the total cost is somewhere probably around $2.5 million.
Substation or the entire project?
The entire project.
About $3.5 million.
$3.5 million. If they did not borrow that money for 35 years, they would have to raise the rates substantially to get enough money to be able to build these projects or even to connect anyone on the system, because they have to buy meters, transformers, and all these other items to be able to connect people to the system. So they do go out for these loans. They're just like a home mortgage, except it's for 35 years. And it starts out with a lot of interest and then goes down just like your home mortgage. and then the principal goes up, but it's level debt service payments. Yes.
There's something else that we also look at when we're building a substation like the one in Kamado. Kamado has been probably the most needed substation in our system in the last 10 years, especially those who live towards the end of it because we have voltage problems. Your substation is in Magdalena. It's 150 miles away, perhaps the, one of the longest distribution circuits in the United States. Our problem is we never had a place to tie into in Arizona. We had an agreement with Navapache, and we started working, and they changed management and said, nope, we don't want to do it anymore. So we had to go back and go to Tucson Electric and work out an agreement. It took us 2 years to tie into the Springerville Generation Station, for which we built the transmission line. We're about 90% done with the substation, probably 50% done with the double circuit that comes here. What does that mean? It's a lot of money. I said $3.5-4 million to build it. Well, there's this thing called losses. Go back to that 150 miles. How many of you have run 500 feet of garden hose? And how much water do you get out of the end of it? You got a lot of loss. Well, we get losses on the line, just the heat that dissipates the electricity, and that costs us money. We pay a lot of money in losses just to get the power to Kamado. So we figure by building something close, we're not going to have all those losses. As a matter of fact, those losses are going to help pay for the substation in this project over the life of the loan. So we do look at that. It's not only an out-of-pocket expense, it's just going to hit your rate book right away. It's offsetting the costs. I just wanted to make that clear.
And also, RUS has some rules. When they look at, on the engineering side of a cooperative, you are not supposed to have more than two sets of regulators in series. Richard says you have four, which, and also you are not supposed to have more than an 8-volt drop at the end of the line, because they want you to have quality service. So when I did this cost of service study, I annualized for the Kamado sub and all of these. We took out some board expenses. I put in some interest on long-term debt to cover the Kamado sub and associated projects. And then we looked at how much the cooperative needs. The minimum operating tier is 1.1. We came up with a 1.5 tier, which is really reasonable on an operating tier basis.
Captain.
That means that's the revenue less expenses. So that tier is what's called times interest earned ratio. It's what RUS looks at as your ability as a cooperative to repay your debt, both principal and interest. So we decided we needed a certain amount of money to increase rates to be able to reach this tier level, to make RUS happy and for the cooperative not to go into default on their mortgage covenants. So at that point, we look at each individual rate class: residential, small commercial, irrigation, energy thermal storage, large commercial. We look at those and see who's paying, who's making a margin for the cooperative. Residential, small commercial, energy thermal storage, and irrigation, and the lighting services are not even paying for their expenses. So therefore, we had to look at those and say, okay, of this rate increase, how do we determine who needs to pay for it? It's the people who aren't paying for their expenses and are not creating a margin. Now that margin is the money that the cooperative uses, but remember that this cooperative has not had a rate increase for their margins since 1996. That's 14 years. Imagine not having a raise at your job for 14 years. And so this cooperative needs this money to be able to make their payments. Go ahead.
When Kathy says that Socorro Electric Co-op hasn't had a raise in their rates. That doesn't mean the cost of power hasn't gone up. Basically, right. We buy power from Tri-State, and we pass that through. Whatever they raise the cost to us, that's automatically passed to you, but we do not get a penny of that. We do not get a mill of that. And what you say is it's been 14 years. We've been working on the same budget for 14 years.
Right, right. So they've absorbed any increases in labor costs, in benefits, in the cost of just doing business, the cost of paper, the cost of billing, you know, all of these items, they've absorbed those increases. So we look at each individual class and determine who needs to start paying a little bit more. Residential, small commercial, and these that were not even covering their expenses, we did increase more than other classes. So at that point, we look within the class and we say, you know, who's paying for it in the residential class? Well, based on the cost of service study, which is nationwide, the methodology is used nationwide. It's not something I came up with or anybody here in the state came up with. It is a nationwide tool of allocating to the classes. And so we looked at it, and the cost-based rate to serve a customer that doesn't use even 1 kilowatt hour is $43 a month. Right now, you're at $9 a month. We are proposing to go to $15 a month to gradually start increasing that. We're still getting the same amount of money whether we get it from the kilowatt hour or we get it from the service charge. If we had left it at $9, your kilowatt hour charge would have probably been a penny more than we're proposing now, a penny or two. I'm not quite sure what it is, but we knew that we needed to start increasing the system charge because a lot of the margin that the cooperative is getting over the expenses is tied up in kilowatt hour sales. And when the consumer starts conserving, based on a couple of instances that are probably coming up in the future, the margins are going to start deteriorating again. So we've got to keep the cooperative moving towards increasing the system charge so we can lower the kilowatt hour charge so that everybody fairly pays for their service.
The system charge, is that for each meter?
Yes.
So if you got half a dozen meters on your place, you're going to have it for every damn meter, right?
Yes. Yes. But remember that whoever uses even 1 kilowatt hour is subsidizing the person that doesn't use any by the difference between the system charge and what the cost-based charge should be. So if I'm using 500 kilowatt hours and somebody doesn't use any, I'm paying for their service. And it's been this way ever since I have started working on rates back in the 70s. We have gradually started increasing customer charges. Most of my clients are between $15 and $20 right now. The neighboring cooperatives at Sierra down at Elephant Butte is $15. And they're coming in probably this year to readjust their rates up. Navapache over here, they charge $25.25 system charge per month. Central New Mexico over in Moriarty and Mountaineer charges $15.25 a month. And they will probably come in and increase that because they're not cost-based. So we have inter-class subsidies and we have intra-class subsidies within the class. So we are trying to correct this over time gradually. Yes, sir?
I got one more. What are the electric co-op or neighbors to the east in 1950?
Socorro Electric has the lowest customer charge in all 44 member cooperatives of Tri-State. And one of the lowest that I've seen in research that I've done around the nation. So we need to start building that up, because when the consumer starts conserving, you need your electricity. We know it's a requirement, and we feel, you know, we see it too. PNM just went in for a 21% increase in Albuquerque. So we're seeing it along with the rest of the nation. Now, when I talk about conservation and people start conserving, it's hard to conserve when you're only using 400 kilowatt hours a month. When we get down to the state level and the federal level, we've just had Richard can talk about this more than me, but on the federal level, we have something called cap and trade that everybody keeps hearing about. They kind of died in Washington, what was it, last year or the year before. But it will raise its head again. And what that says is they're going to start penalizing for carbon emissions. The carbon emissions adding to the greenhouse gases. And so the power suppliers that create these carbon emissions are going to have to go out and buy permits for those. And it's going to flow through to everyone. So we can expect the cost of power to go up from the power supplier, which causes the consumer to reduce their consumption, which if we keep it low, even at $15, is going to hit the margin of your cooperative. And it could bankrupt this cooperative and many more across the nation.
On the cap and trade on the federal level, what was proposed, one estimate came out, it would be $50 per consumer on top of what the regular electric bill is. That calculates to about $8 million a year for the members of Socorro Electric Co-op, money that would not go to the co-op, it would go directly to the cap and trade. Fortunately, that died. In New Mexico, Governor Richardson appointed an environmental improvement board. They went through and decided they were going to be the first in New Mexico to do a cap and trade on the state level, maybe not the first, following California. And it did pass. The board passed it, passed the resolution that the New Mexico generation, and a thing with coal, had to have a cap and trade, which was going to directly affect us, the consumers, and it was supposed to go into effect in January of 2012. Governor Martinez, the new governor, came in and says, whoa, that's going to hurt our economy. So she directed the assistant director of the Energy Department not to file that resolution in New Mexico. It's going to go through litigation because the environmentalists are already throwing their hands up and saying foul. But I don't believe New Mexico, with the economy we have, it would kill us. But anyway, that's where we're at with our own cap and trade in New Mexico. But it's not going to end there. There's a table of environmental laws that want to be put in the next 10 years. And there's at least 15 of them, anything from fly ash from a generation station, which is not a contaminant, but they're saying it's a contaminant. They want to capture it. Every little thing that you could think of is up there on this list that the environmentalists want. So we've got a lot to face. I mean, just not what our margins are, but on the national level and the state level. So it's very important when this comes up that your co-op get involved, contact the members, or members get a hold of our congressional leaders. But that's what we're looking at on the state and national level. That's totally outside the realm of these margins that we're trying to get to keep the co-op going.
And our attempt by raising the customer charge is to keep the cooperative financially together, and to ensure that they can pay their bills. So it's going to keep going up. In the next few years, we're going to have to do this again. We've got to get this to a cost base so you can buy your commodity, your kilowatt hours, without having any adders onto it for the operations of the cooperative. anything that's not customer related.
Right now what Kathy's trying to do, or has done, is come up with a way so we can meet our margins, so we can make our loan payments to RUS, and have that tier that they asked us for. But we don't end there. She said that she didn't annualize about $400,000
right.
that she could have put in there to say, hey, these are the expenses of the co-op. That means that our rates would have to go up higher. But $400,000 is the target for the co-op to go look and say, hey, how do we cut this $400,000 to zero or to $50,000 or whatever? So it's left a little pressure on us, but forcing us to cut our expenses on that. There's other things, time of use rates. And I really don't want to go into the ETS much, but on the time of use rates, basically our load curves, we have a peak during the day, it goes down to night, peak during the day. If we could shift peaks to this valley at night, it increases our load factor, which basically helps the co-op and it helps the customer. We looked at ways of doing that, like working with the municipality of Socorro on their domestic wells, but not the municipal wells, for them to possibly pump at night and use their storage during the day. And I'm not sure what the situation is here, but if we came up with a rate, it would be applicable to all municipal wells or domestic water systems. Mr. Bruton brought up an excellent idea. Being a rancher and having several wells, he says, well, my stock well can run at night. I mean, my pump can run at night. Why can't I run my pump at night on my 15 or 20 wells? And I know there's at least a couple hundred more wells out here. Could you give us a special rate to pump at night at those wells and then not use power during the day when the cost of power is high? I think that's probably, for the rural rancher, I think that's been the best idea that I've heard. But we are still looking at ways, you know, to educate the consumer. I don't like the word conservation. When I started working for the co-op in 1981, the previous 10 years had been, go out there and sell electricity. Member service, go out there and show them all these neat appliances that they could use so they could start using more electricity and make the co-op solid. We need to sell electricity. Well, the recession came in the 1980s when I started working. They told me, go on out there and show people how to conserve. And I did such a good job, our margins went down. You know, and I'm not bragging because I almost got fired because of it. But the trend went, and that was during the Carter administration. Conserve, conserve, conserve. Well, then all of a sudden, back into the 90s, it was market the power again. And I'm like, what? We just went through these two curves. Well, so we went back to selling power. Now, what are we going to do? It's energy efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go out and try and provide education and information on the latest and greatest types of refrigerators, freezers, lighting. We sell these energy efficient light bulbs that if the entire country used these light bulbs, I mean, we all can pitch in, it would cut down the need for several power plants. So those are the things we need to educate. Energy efficiency. I hate to reduce the quality of life of our consumers by saying, hey, don't use electricity. I had one person in Riley, New Mexico, that he was on oxygen. I don't know if you remember, Hipólito Romero. He was on oxygen. And he went home and they got their bill and they were worried about how much they were spending. And for some reason, they got an idea that it was this oxygen machine that was creating all the problem. And I happened to be deer hunting, and I went by his house, and he says, I'm not using my oxygen. I said, why? He says, I'm trying to conserve electricity. I said, you're going to die. Use your oxygen. And so I looked around their house. They had two refrigerators and two freezers. And believe me, that's what, I said, you know, move a lot of the stuff from one freezer to another, or do you really need this freezer full of water bottles? I mean, think about it. You got to be efficient. The refrigerators that were put out back in the 70s are so inefficient, they use probably 10 times more than the refrigerators you have today. And it's incredible. That's what we need to be doing. That's what our member services people need to be doing, is coming at the right hour, of course, and bringing in education. And I apologize for the time, but we only had 3 weeks to kind of crunch in all these meetings. If we feel we need to come back, or if you feel we need to come back, we will. But anyway.
Well, another thing that, that's kind of thrown a problem with this is that Tri-State is redesigning their rate. We don't know what they're going to do, so that's why we did not do any on-peak, off-peak rates without ETS units or change the times on them or put in two valleys or whatever. That's because Tri-State is redesigning.
Right.
And so it might affect.
But to get this rate into effect to show the government that we can make our payments is very important right now. When we come in and we propose after Tri-State has already told us we're not going to raise your rates in 2011. But right now as we speak, they're working on rate philosophies, to, as she said, to change the structures of their rates. We have to follow piggyback on whatever they do and adjust to what they do. We can come back and talk about these irrigation wells or cattle wells. And if those, we're not going to have any protesters on that, I don't believe. If we're trying to give the consumer a better deal, we're not going to have protesters on that. But those would be, we could probably get those implemented probably in 60 days if it works out. 50.
90.
Anyway, that's my 2 cents on what we can.
Because you have to advertise, remember?
Oh, I'm not the 30 days.
Anyway, what else should I cover?
Comparisons.
Oh, I already did the comparisons, but now I'm Apache.
No, the chicken.
Oh, chicken. I left that out in my car. Since 1996, the cost of a whole chicken has gone up 37%. Gas has gone up 152%. Beans have gone up 68%. Those are the only ones I remember. Is it bread, flour?
Milk. What?
Milk.
Bread, a loaf.
Cows are the same as yeah. 25 years.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, you know, in the overall scheme of things, asking for an overall 7% rate increase for this co-op's margins is not, I think the co-op has done a very good job over the last 14 years to keep from coming in here. Had we known, and we need to touch on the debt cost adjustment, when I first started working on this rate case, I found that the wrong base was being used to determine the pass-through on the debt cost adjustment, because we did incorporate a new base into your retail rates. We went from $6 a month to $9. That was in 2006. That was not a rate increase. That was just to incorporate the increased cost of debt and the increased cost of purchase power into the base rates. We did a slight rate redesign in going from $6 to $9, knowing that we have to gradually increase this over time. So it was incorporated in there, but the new base wasn't used in the calculation of the pass-through. So that's why you've been hearing about this $1.6 million that has been overcharged since 2006. And right now, we are working with the SEDC, which is the computer company, to determine what checks go out to the consumers. If we can't find the consumers and it comes back to the co-op, they'll go into the scholarship fund.
You can't do that. It has to go to the state.
We had that changed about 20 years ago, the cooperatives did, where the cooperatives can put it into a scholarship fund.
It doesn't have to go to the state?
No, that's the escheat laws. And it was changed in the legislature to allow the cooperatives to develop scholarship funds for their students.
What goes to the estate if somebody dies?
Right.
No, I'm saying the state of New Mexico.
No, if somebody dies.
It doesn't go to unclaimed funds?
No, not anymore.
In the state of New Mexico?
No, not anymore. Because rural electric cooperatives, they went to the legislature and got it passed so they could develop scholarship funds for the young students in their areas. And they give out how many scholarships a year?
We give out about 12 scholarships, maybe 15, and those are to every high school in our service area, which we service 5 high schools.
Mm-hmm.
So we give scholarships to the valedictorians, the salutatorians, and Tri-State also has scholarships that they offer to students, which we put on a rotating basis with
right.
the high schools that we service.
Right, and Roberta, you know, was Donna to make sure that the counselor here at the school
right.
gets the applications. There's also a Rocky Mountain Electrical League scholarship that we're a part of that students can apply for a scholarship there.
So
well, going back to the refund, it's taken some time to do. We have to get permission from the Public Regulation Commission or let them know what we're going to do and how we're going to refund the over-collection of money.
And are you asked because...
And the Rural Utility Service, of which we have not received the go-ahead to do it. We've had to go back through every account of the 13,000 accounts for the last 4 years and figure out how much we over-collected. There will be a check refunded, and it's not like anybody's going to get rich or anything, because it was a very small amount over a long period of time. Some people may get a check of $40 or $50. Somebody, like maybe the school, may get a check for $1,000 or $100. But those checks are expected to go out in February.
Now, if did that scare you? Now, if the person that the check goes to is delinquent on their account or they've disconnected and we're delinquent when they disconnected, then that money goes towards uncollectibles and accounts.
Right, and that'll also help the co-op as a whole. Because, as I said, we had a high uncollectible rate, and instead of sending a check back to a person in 90 days delinquent, we apply it to the bill that helps them.
Right.
Helps them out too.
And it helps the cooperative's cash flow on those uncollectibles. So the process for this is on February 3rd, I'm going to be filing the advice notice and tariffs with the Public Regulation Commission. There is a 20-day window in there after that time period in which to file a protest to the rates. And then the commission, if there are no protests, 30 days after they're filed, they're deemed approved by operation of law. And they would go into effect. So the first time you would see it on your bill would be for your March usage, your April bill. Now, if there is enough protest, then the commissioners get together and determine whether there is just cause to go to hearing on this. And then at that time, I would file the cost of service study and all related papers. We'd go through interrogatories, answer interrogatories, do testimony, and sometimes rebuttal testimony after we receive staff testimony and intervener testimony. And it goes on, they suspend the rates for a period of up to 9 months. And in that case, Socorro, we have approval from the board to ask for interim rate relief because of the problem of not making TIER again. If we don't make TIER again, it's going to be bad with the federal government. They will come in and they will take over.
And in the
they
last,
could take over. I'm not saying they will.
In the last 4 months, RUS, or the federal government, has been watching us like a hawk. It's getting calls daily. Attending our meetings, we want to know what we're doing with certain situations. We have to answer. We have to call and tell them what our margins were for that month and what we're doing. Are you guys doing maintenance? I say no. Are you guys doing pole inspection? I say no. Are you guys buying vehicles? We have to buy 2 vehicles for the West area because out here, a truck can get how many miles in a year? Probably 150,000, 100,000 miles in a year. So we have to get vehicles to be able to maintain the winter. The one thing we couldn't get was a bucket truck because of the expense of it. So we're going to push that off until our margins are back up. Don't get us wrong. The co-op's not broke. We're just not meeting our margins. We have $4.5 million that are invested that we could use to pay for these projects today. But we've got to be very careful how we spend that money.
RUS looks at the revenue on an annual basis less the expenses. And that's what they look at. They don't look at how much cash you have in the bank. And remember that the cooperative has to have that cash to be able to pay for the projects prior to getting loan funds to reimburse that general fund. RUS used to have a rule that you had to have 8% of revenues in cash. That was one of their rules. They finally did away with that because it was...
Don't forget the power bill. Our power bill for this month is $1,130,000.
Right. And when consumers don't send cash in, you know, the co-op may have to rely on
using its investment.
Yeah. So are there any questions?
I've got just one other comment that came in for that. One of the 500 kilowatt hours for the average customer.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
right. An average consumer uses 500 kilowatt hours on this system, which is normal around the state of New Mexico. The proposed bill is about $8.31 higher than the existing bill. That's how much it would go up in 1 month's period. For 500 kilowatt hours.
And
six of that is the system
charge. Hours, yeah.
If you have an idea of how many kilowatt hours you use, you've got to pay more than
500 kilowatt hours right now, you're paying $69.19. We're proposing $77.50, which is an increase of $8.31. And I might add that even at the proposed rate, you're cheaper than Sierra Electric down at Elephant Butte, Central New Mexico and Moriarty and Mountaineer. This is versus your proposed rate.
Is that about 16% increase?
No.
$60 to $68.
No, $77.50 to $69. $8.31. It's about 12%.
About 12%. Yeah. And it changes. The less you use, the higher the increase is.
Explain that. That does not make sense.
Because you're looking at percentages on small amounts. You're going from $9 to $15, which is $6.
I'm $700 a month just on my store, so it's not a small amount.
Are you a small commercial?
I don't know what they got me built at, but I'm just this side of Hightown, off the world, and my electric bill next door is about $750 a month. It's a hell of a big bill.
And I don't understand what you were saying before about the one using 500 kilowatts an hour for someone who uses less. They basically aren't paying anything for the $500.
Yeah.
Is paying for all of it, and I'm going, wait a minute.
When you do it,
we use very little, but we've got to have to tell
them. When you do a cost of service study, all of the expenses are by account number, whether it's operations or maintenance expense, consumer accounting, consumer billing, administrative in general, office supplies, all of these, by every account, is allocated to either customer or capacity. Now, if you used 0 kilowatt hours, if everyone used 0 kilowatt hours, the cooperative would still have to have facilities out here, a substation, lines, transformers, meters, regulators, capacitors, fuses. They still have to have the equipment out there regardless of what you use. And so that is customer related. Anything above that would be capacity. That's your demand on the system. Okay? So in a residential rate, for instance, and where you have another area that the only expense that goes into it is the energy portion of the power bill. And that's the kilowatt hour, the energy allocation, okay? So you've got customer, capacity, and energy. Energy is just kilowatt hour related. Capacity for a residential goes into kilowatt hours. Customer is what I'm saying costs the cooperative $43 per customer per month to provide you service whether you use a kilowatt hour or not.
But those costs are under control of the co-op itself. Yes. For instance, okay. The expenses of the trustees some of them go into customer. Is that correct?
And we have annualized out those expenses over what the bylaws say. Actually, we're doing it gradually because in this year, you're still going to have more than five trustees.
But the customer himself has no control over those expenses.
No, but the board does.
Exactly.
There's the problem.
That's when you elect your board.
What did you budget for legal fees?
I didn't increase legal fees at all because that is an unknown.
I know, that's the problem.
Or the cost of this rate case.
But that's the problem. You haven't, but no telling what the legal fees are going to be for the co-op last year or this coming year.
That's right. I don't.
And that's a very good point.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
We don't.
Somebody should set a budget and say this is what it is or get rid of this foolishness.
I don't think I finished answering
your question, did I? Okay. What happens if a person uses 0 kilowatt hours and they're paying $9 and it's costing $43? That difference goes into the kilowatt hour rate. So if you use a kilowatt hour, you're paying for the person who's using less than you. Does that make any sense?
No, because that would be
you're subsidizing.
Conserving, not overusage.
But we still have to have the facilities out there in case you want to use your kilowatt hours. You've got a meter, you've got a transformer, you've got electric lines out there that are built to serve you.
Okay, so that's the 43.
Yes,
right?
That's a portion of the 43.
Okay.
The operating and maintaining of that system. When the guys go out in a blizzard in the middle of the night, or even when they go out and scout the lines to make sure they don't have any problems, that is the operation and maintenance of the system.
And does that go into the 43 also? Is that
a portion of it? Some of it is capacity related. Okay, and there's formulas. There's a cost of service methodology on how to allocate. We use a zero intercept calculations for transformers. We use minimum system for maintenance and operation of overhead and underground lines. The minimum system would be if they built this system entirely over using single phase number 4, 12 poles per mile, with no three-phase lines, that is customer-related. The three-phase lines and everything would be capacity, okay? So
let me just make one quick comment, because I know people are ready to ask questions.
Yeah.
Started already. After February the 3rd, you can call the co-op and request a copy of the filing with the commission. You can also request a form to file a protest, and we will give it. You've got 20 days to file that protest within that period. I do recommend, if you have a question that we can try and answer, to contact us first.
Are you trying to get person?
But if you can't answer,
are you involved in
that, that's, no, but I used to design the rights.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, as I've been listening to you, it seems to me that I heard you say, first of all, you've been working for the co-op since 1970.
Late 70s.
Okay, the late 70s. That's quite a long time.
Yes.
It's over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we just now, and also the other thing I noticed is that we had to plan this project out about 10 years. We're supposed to plan our projects out and have the money to do the project years ago for the project we're doing now. Let me see. Back here it said something about the RUS requires that we have the money to do the project before we do it. or we can prove that we can pay for the project before we do it.
Well,
this project's been in the works for quite a while.
Yes, yes.
And so
it is.
This project is not a project. It's not we haven't been able to prove that, or we should have been able to prove we could pay for it. Correct?
Yes.
It kind of works in a way, we have a long-range plan.
Yes.
Okay. And in the long-range plan, it describes the best it can for 10 years what we're going to do. But then we have a four-year work plan.
Right.
With which we come up and we say, these are the RUS won't just let us build something to build it. We have to prove to them that there's a necessity to do it.
I understand.
Whether we have the money or not in our pocket. Then with that plan, then we go back to RUS and say, here's a loan application to be able to do these projects at a low interest rate. They go through our projects, they will loan us the money. They won't give it to us to build it. We have to use our general funds money to go on out and build it. We have to prove that we're in good financial standing. We have to prove that we have money
Stop
to pay.
Right there.
Yes,
you have to prove that you were in good financial standing 4 years ago for this project. You just said it yourself.
Actually, 2 years ago. 2 years ago. It's a four-year work plan.
You had to prove years ago that you had you were in good financial standing.
The four-year work plan. 2 years ago when we started this work plan, we were in good standing.
2 years ago we were in good standing. So it took us 2 years to get this bad shape.
But remember, we were over, the co-op was overbilling about $350,000 in debt cost adjustment revenues per year. So it made it look like it was good, and then when we found this, we said, we should have been in here a year or two ago.
Okay, that brings me to another point.
Maybe I'll just keep the overbilling and not raise anything now.
But we can't do that because the financials, we may look at the revenue less expenses. That's not
how to address that point.
Okay.
We hire people that made that kind of mistake. We are making those kinds of mistakes. If I make that kind of mistake in my checkbook, do you know what happens to me? I didn't even make a mistake in my checkbook. Somebody else made a mistake. And you know what happened? They shut down my accounts, even though I forwarded the money to them and proved I had the money. They shut down all my accounts now, not yesterday. So in 2 years, so they would have shut down your accounts. So we are hiring people that don't know how to calculate these things properly.
They are no longer with the cooperative.
Right. It took us how long to figure that out? Okay.
That's not the issue here.
The issue here is we showed we had the money for this, whether we had the money or not, whether it was it was done incorrectly.
Right.
We showed the money. You had a 10-year plan.
Yes.
Okay.
But a ten-year plan.
How much
is
of this revenue that you want to increase is going to go for costs for trustees for
none of it. We reduced the
trustees. No, you did not reduce. We reduced. We went and voted.
Yes, you did.
Yes,
but I went into the test year. I looked at the expenses of the trustees. And I reduced them down to a level, I think I used 7 trustees this year.
How?
And that was 6 times $10,000 plus 15 for the president.
How, for all these years that you've been working for this cooperative, how could the situation get beyond you?
Get beyond me?
How could you just suddenly come to us now and tell us, now we have a problem? Didn't you see the problem coming down?
No, I didn't discover this until I started working on this cost of service study. It is not my duty as a rate analyst to come in and micromanage the cooperative and tell you where you can spend your money. That is the Board of Trustees' job. My job is to develop adequate rates to be able to keep this cooperative financially sound. Whether or not there was an error made in the past.
What year did you use the cost study? What year did you use?
It ended June of 2010.
Okay.
So I have taken those expenses down for the trustees. Now, I did not go in and do an audit of every expense in there to find out, you know, how the cooperative is doing their books, but audits have been done.
They have, but they've not been right. Okay, February 3rd, you're ready to file February 3rd. You, sir, just told me if we had to have another meeting, we had to discuss this further before we did anything any further, we would have more meetings about this. February 3rd is what, 2-3 weeks away?
Mm-hmm.
And you're ready to file. You're ready to file, so literally the only way we have to object to this is to file
a protest
with the PRC, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
In other words, this is in the works. This is going to happen unless we file a protest with the PRC.
Mm-hmm. No. No, we are filing the advice notice and tariffs February 3rd.
This
20 days after that,
right.
Within that 20 days, a protest has to be filed.
And 30 days after that,
with 30 days after the date we file, if there are no protests,
right.
They would automatically go into effect by operation of law.
Okay, coming back to another point. And if they didn't go into effect because of the protest, it seems to me that our board, who we are trying change, some people are even under recall, has said you can have relief for the rates, which what does that mean?
No, we would ask for emergency relief because if the cooperative...
What is that exactly?
What that means is that the rates would, they would allow the rates to go into effect pending a refund or an adjustment at the final resolution of the rate case. But the commission cannot disallow a rate increase when the cooperative needs those to make their mortgage covenants.
We can protest and not have a rate, and RUS can take us over, correct?
I believe so.
Didn't I hear you say that when I came in the door?
Yeah. They could.
Okay. So RUS can take us over?
And they will raise your rates.
They may raise our rates, but we're going to eliminate a lot of people that have been doing things that have not been supposed to be done, correct? We won't necessarily have our board members. We won't necessarily have the people that have been robbing us blind for years in power. No. Okay, I think I have it just about right.
Okay, are there any other questions?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you guys for coming.